You're listening to Critical Mass, the coaching perspective with Master Certified Coach, Doug Gefeller.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the radio show. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller, and today our topic is group coaching. You know, my business partner, Rick Franzi, and I co-host this show, which airs on Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 4 p.m. However, in case you're confused, on the first and third Thursday of every month, we have a special show which focuses entirely on coaching, all brought to you live on octalkradio.net. So our radio show is an extension of our 16-year business practice where we build CEO peer groups for executives in Orange County, California, all under the brand Renaissance Executive Forums. Renaissance is an international organization committed to helping its members take their businesses to the next level. And Rick and I are currently leading multiple CEO peer groups here in Orange County. If you'd like to learn more about our peer groups or our coaching practice, I would encourage you to check out our website, which is www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. I might also mention that Rick is the author of the book Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups. This has been called the definitive guide to the CEO peer group experience, and it is available for sale on Amazon. You can find it by typing in Richard Franzi under author. That's Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. So let's get on to our coaching discussion for today. You know, coaching is a part of our service offering within Critical Mass for Business. I'm the lead partner for our coaching practice, a past president of the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation, and a master certified coach. My coach training was done through the Coaches Training Institute, CTI, and I had been coaching executives and business owners for 16 years under the banner of the Coaching Perspective, which is part of the Critical Mass for Business service groups. Well, you know, I wanted to talk about group coaching today because we tend to think of coaching as an individual one-on-one experience between the coach and the client. Some of you may be coaches listening in. Some of you may be prospective clients or existing clients listening in. But actually, my favorite coaching is really group coaching, and it ends up being the type of coaching that I do the most. Let me give you what my definition of group coaching is really all about. It is about creating a business environment where each individual is not only aware of the company's visions and goals, but they're clear on their own visions and goals. An environment where each person strives to achieve a new personal best that also drives the company towards achieving its best. An environment made up of support, encouragement, and accountability, not one of just checks and balances or of control and command structure. You know, and I think that's the essence in my mind of group coaching. It's all about environment. It's all about getting alignment. You know, and we frequently talk about balance between life and work. But here in business group coaching, I'm talking about balance or alignment between individual business goals and the company's business goals. And if we don't have that alignment, then we're going to have issues. We're going to have problems, and they show up in a number of ways, all of which we're really familiar with. But, you know, before I really get started on the group coaching, I just want to share with you an excerpt from a new book I read about in the Wall Street Journal. It's called The Essential Guide to Management by Alan Murray. And he talks about the end of management, as the journal puts it. And let me just share with you a couple of thoughts. He says that, or the journal says that, in recent years, most of the great management stories have not been of triumphs of the corporation, but triumphs over the corporation. General Electric's Jack Welch may have been the last of the great corporate builders, but even Mr. Welch was famous for waging war on bureaucracy. Other management icons of recent decades earned their reputation by attacking entrenched corporate cultures, bypassing corporate hierarchies, undermining corporate structures, and otherwise using the tactics of revolution in a desperate effort to make the elephants dance. The best corporate managers have become, in a sense, enemies of the corporation. The reasons for this are clear enough, at least to Mr. Murray. He says, corporations are bureaucracies and managers are bureaucrats. Their fundamental tendency is towards self-perpetuation. They are almost by definition resistant to change. They were designed and tasked not with reinforcing market forces, but with supplementing and even resisting the market. Well, you know, those are really strong words. Words is an understatement. It's really an indictment of corporate structures today. And he goes on in his book to talk about market conditions, about what's caused this, what's going to change things, why we have to be looking for new management structures, and particularly about the need for innovation, for quicker movement, for managers being much more flexible, much more fleet of foot in dealing with today's environment. I think that one of the things that I didn't see in his article, which really to me is a key issue, is how do we deal with the culture, the attitude that today's employees have when they come to work? And I'm not just talking about attitude in sense of Generation X and Y and whether this generation or that generation has a good work ethic. I'm talking about the fact that in today's society, in today's environment, we all have individual goals. We all have an overworked schedule. And the question is, how do those goals, how do our personal dreams fit in with the corporate dreams? You know, I've sat in on so many vision and mission statements and strategic planning meetings and facilitated many of them. And we always talk about what's the corporation's vision, what's its mission, what's the main thing. But we never talk in those sessions about what the individual managers, what the employees' visions and missions are, and how do those interface? You know, and the question really is, where's the appropriate place to have that conversation? Frankly, it really isn't appropriate to have it in a strategic management meeting, an offsite meeting to talk about where the corporation's going. But to me, group coaching is where that dialogue takes place. It's where the individual desires, wants, and dreams are meshed with the corporation desires, wants, and dreams. One of the key things in that kind of a discussion is not only do the individuals, or let's say the management team, have to be coached there, which is not just the CEO or just his direct reports. What also needs to be coached is the group dynamics. Those group dynamics are as influential, maybe even more influential, than individual behaviors. And having the ability to see how individuals behave in a group setting adds significantly to the value of individual coaching. You know, it is not new. Most of us have heard of, many of us have experienced on either the coaching end or on the receiving end, business coaching on an individual basis. But how many of us have experienced the kind of group coaching that goes on of a management team? You know, at the coaching perspective, we believe that there's a multitude of types of coaching that have to be addressed. We do individual coaching from the top executive to the newest entry-level position. We do individual coaching for people who want to sharpen their business skills. Occasionally, we're asked to do individual coaching for people who need some help. We do group coaching for work units, departments, and project teams. We do communication workshops. And, of course, change management coaching, where there's either a physical or operational change that has a major impact on your staff. Those are the kinds of coaches we do. But we're going to focus on group coaching here. What is it? How do we do it? Who can benefit from it? And how it differs from traditional individual coaching. Let me start out with a disclaimer. My disclaimer is I'm going to talk to you about how we do this at the coaching perspective. And I'm not saying that this is the only way that can be done, or even that this is the best way for you, our coaching audience, to do it. And I say this because this process is based on our experiences, not only as coaches, but also on our experiences as executives who have actually started their own companies and have held major leadership roles in both large and small companies. We have incorporated our business experiences, the successes, the failures, into our training as certified coaches, all to create a process that can be easily understood and used by our clients, the management team. So, the client is the management team in a group coaching business environment. Let's talk about teams. What is a team? A team, is two people a team? You know, if you look at sports, if you're playing doubles tennis, two people is a team. If you're playing football, 11 people is a team. In fact, if you count the guys on the sideline, the special teams, maybe it's more like 30 or 40 people are a team. So a team can be made up of any number. Anytime you're more than one person, we're dealing with a team. And that's what we talk about in our coaching environment. You know, I'll just start out by sharing one example. I was called into a corporation and asked if I would do coaching, individual coaching of an employee that the CEO felt was really not performing at the level that they should be. In fact, they weren't performing at the level that they used to be, in his opinion. So as we discussed what it was he wanted me to coach this employee on, I started to get the sense that this long list of complaints or issues that he had with this employee were not really getting to the heart of what the issue really was. After we talked about it for a while, I asked if we could bring in the employee to get his take and to get his agreement that, in fact, that he agreed that these were the issues and that he was open to being coached on those issues by me. So we brought the employee in. The conversation started. The CEO said, you know, I've got a problem with this. And, of course, the employee said, well, what do you mean you got a problem with that? And the conversation went back and forth and back and forth. At some point, I finally stopped the conversation because I realized that we were not defining what needed to be coached in terms of individual coaching, that what was needed was team coaching, group coaching. Here were two people looking at an issue from totally different perspectives that until that issue could be addressed, they needed to be brought together. They needed to be coached to look at the issue from a common, unified perspective. So I started asking questions of the manager. I started asking questions of the employee. And the conversation went on, and we kept digging deeper and deeper until finally, in a moment of frustration, the CEO throws up his hands and says, well, you know, my real issue is your desk is always messy. And your office is always messy, and I can never find anything in it when you're not there. Well, this had not come up any time previous in the conversation. The employee stops and goes, what do you mean my desk's messy? Yeah, it's messy. Yeah, I've got stacks of stuff all over, but I can find what I need. And if you need something, ask me for it. So is this about the way my office looks, or is this about my performance? Well, now we're into group coaching. The group coaching here that had to take place was the CEO needed to really get clear as to what was the behavior that he was trying to drive here. Was there an issue with performance, or was there an issue with, let's say, appearance? And the employee needed to get clear here about the fact that what wasn't important to him at all in terms of appearance of his office and desk was absolutely critical to the CEO, who was bringing prospective clients through the office and looking into this key employee's office as they went by on their way to the CEO's and drawing the conclusion that based on the way things look, this might not be a very organized place to bring your business. What this led to was group coaching. This group coaching discussion led to a clear identification of what the issue was and what the expectations were by both parties. Where this ultimately wound up, just to sort of tie up the story here, was that I did coach the individual. He did agree that he did have a problem, and he could see the CEO's point of view with the way his office looked. And we did do some coaching about what his work habits were. And in the process of working with this employee, I also did some coaching with the CEO about really getting clear about what was it that he was really interested in from his staff. Was he interested in driving performance, or was he interested in just driving appearances that sort of met his standards? This is a clear example of two people with an issue. This is team coaching. This is group coaching. It can be more, it can be less. Well, what does every team need to really be successful? You know, again, if you use the sports analogy, you look at the fact that what kind of a game would we have if you looked at a soccer game, for instance, and there were no rules, there were no boundaries, there were no out of bounds, there was no time limit, there was no restrictions on how you handled the ball. And in fact, maybe there wasn't even a clear objective as to what was a score. Was a score when you threw it in, when you got close, a near miss, would that be a score? Well, obviously, we all know that, you know, teams cannot be successful, cannot play and compete unless they clearly understand the rules, the regulations, the individual roles that each team member plays, and the team role that's being played, and what the objectives of the team and the individuals are. This is what group coaching is all about in a business environment. You know, how many times is it clear as to what the work group, what the department objectives are, but has anybody thought to talk about, say, one of the individuals or any of the individuals in that department to identify, are that individual's objectives really in sync with the department's objectives? You know, if the department objective is to accomplish some tasks within the corporation in a sort of seamless and visible way, let's say they're a support department and their goal is to give marketing support, to be there, to be available, to have material available, to have to be a resource in a way that was totally unobtrusive and almost invisible to the line managers, that might be a great objective for the department. But what if we've got a person in that department who, in their mind, their career path depends upon them personally getting visibility in this corporation? They need exposure. They need recognition. They need to be constantly identified as the person who came up with the idea. With these two different set of objectives, we're set up for failure. We're set up for an issue where the team objectives, the department objectives, are not consistent with the individual objectives and goals. This is what group coaching is all about in a corporate environment. Okay? This is how it fits into a business or a management team. Most issues with management teams that I have seen or been involved in, and that covers quite a few companies over an extended span of time, most of those issues all fall into the area of not having unified goals and objectives, not understanding where the trade-offs are for the individual and for the group. And of course, what we find causes most of that is we find it's communication. Okay. Is there really clear communication about what the team, department, the group's objectives are? And is there clear communication about individual roles, rules, regulations, objectives, and what the individual's goals and dreams are for his or her participation in this team effort? Having these kind of clear objectives, having the differences identified between the team's goals and my personal goals, once they're identified, once you've taken your group coaching to the first level of identifying what are the differences, what are the disconnects in those goals, objectives, dreams, then you can address the issue of, okay, how do we coach both of these entities, the team and the individual, so that there is a give and take and that they both can feel like this is a win-win environment? Because if it isn't, you're not going to get top performance. That's what team coaching is really all about. Let's touch for a minute about the process that we at the Coaching Perspective here at Critical Mass use for approaching a business environment where we've been called in to identify some team coaching and look at what we're doing. The first thing that we want to do is we want to sort of, to use coaching language, define the engagement. What is it that we're asked to do? who is the client? You know, in an individual coaching situation, even in a corporate environment, it's very clear who the client is. But if you're coaching a team, if you're coaching in this example, a management team, who is the client? Who does the coach report to? Is it the CEO? Is it the team? Is it the individual members of the team? Where do you go if there's an issue with a team member? Do you take that to the team or do you take that to the CEO? You know, and each engagement is a little bit different because it depends upon the tolerance of the CEO. It depends upon the openness, the culture of the company that you're dealing with. But what is consistent in all cases is that this has to be addressed, has to be identified, and has to be clearly stated in writing so that everyone knows the rules. We're back to the soccer game. We can't play if we don't know where the boundaries are. We can't play if we don't know who's handling the time clock. So everybody needs to be aware of who is the coach reporting to, what is his allegiance. You know, I like to think that in most cases I try to get the management team, the CEO, and the individual members to agree that the client that I'm really coaching is the team. I'm coaching the CEO and I'm coaching the individuals, but I'm coaching them to get improved performance, peak performance from the management team, and that team's ultimate capability, their results, their performance is what I'm coaching towards. In the process, I coach individuals, but really I'm always looking at the team. I'm always looking at the management team. I'm always looking at is what I'm doing with the CEO or is what I'm doing with an individual member of the team enhancing the performance of the team, not just enhancing the performance of an individual. You need to address the issue of confidentiality. Again, it's a little bit different in a group coaching environment. If you come up with issues with a individual member, how are those surfaced in the team environment? You know, again, I think that you can't coach anybody unless they're assured of total 100%, 110% confidentiality. And that's critical in team coaching. However, one of the additional guidelines that I like to put into our team coaching practice is that the individuals understand that I will frequently ask for permission to break that confidentiality and bring an issue or a perspective to the team as a whole, but only if they agree that it can be done. This usually handles the issue. Okay, so we've kind of defined the engagement. We know what our objective is. We want to set a clear objective. In other words, we're not just doing this for we all walk away happy and feel better after a couple of months or a year or whatever it is. But we want to define if our objective is to increase team performance, how are we going to measure increased team performance? Is it going to be shorter meetings, less yelling and screaming? Everybody walks away happy at the end? Is it going to be measured in some output of production, some financial number? Or is it going to be measured in some combination of all of those things? One of the things that the team has to address right up front in the coaching engagement is, what is that measurement going to be? What is it we're looking for, and how do we know when we've actually achieved it? And then let's set up a process where there is a regular reporting by the coach to the team of, from the coach's perspective, how are we scoring against achieving this objective of increased performance? Now, obviously, what I also look for when I'm doing that reporting on whatever frequency that we've set up is I also want to know what's the team's perspective on how we're doing towards achieving increased performance and reaching those individual metrics that we set up. What is the CEO's perception? What is each individual team's member's perception? And what is the group perception? All of that is critical. Okay, now we're going to get started. Have to take a drink here. This is more talking than I like to do. You know, as a coach, I spend most of my time listening. This is a real stretch for me. The first thing that I have to do in a group coaching engagement is to really survey the environment that I'm going to be coaching. And what I mean by that is I need to get an assessment of who are the team members and where are they. There's many assessment tools. Some of my favorite tools for doing this might be a DISC profile, which lets me know what each individual team member's communication style is. It might be using the StrengthFinder assessments to identify what are the five major talents or the strengths that each team member has. And then once I've identified those things for every individual member of the team, the CEO and his direct or her direct reports, then it's a matter of sharing those communication styles, sharing those findings actually with the team. It might even involve a more in-depth survey of what the employees feel about the performance of the management team. You know, there's nothing more shocking than to do an independent, objective, online survey, blind survey of your staff and find out how they think the management team is performing, how they think the company is performing, and then measuring those results against how the management team feels and measuring that against how the CEO feels. If you want to look at three different sets of scores for anything, that usually tells the story right there. So we frequently do, we have here at Critical Mass, we use a proprietary employee assessment tool that really gives us some great information about what the employees are thinking. We also may want to do, as part of this survey in the environment, some individual interviews and observations. And by interviews, beyond the survey, this would be some relatively short discussions, but some dialogue with key employees about what's their perception about how the management team is performing and really where they're going. Also, what's really critical here is some observation of how the team is performing. In other words, I can talk to five individual team members, and I can talk to the CEO, but none of that, and I can ask them how the team meetings go, but none of that gives me as clear a picture of really what the group dynamics are as I would get if I sat in on the meeting. So one of my first requirements is always to be able to sit in on a number of the management meetings. It might be the monthly operational meeting where the financial and operating results are reported. It might be the one-on-one meetings with the department heads and the CEO as to their personal performance, their department's performance for the month. But all of those things give me a sense and sort of complete my survey of the environment so that I can get a good feel for, are the problems that were expressed to me by the CEO and the team the problems that I also see as an outsider with a different perspective? Are the problems that the employees expressed in the survey that we did the same that I would see as an outsider? Or is there something else going on here? Is there some modifying of what was the reported behavior with what maybe is the actual behavior? So that survey of the environment is very critical. And until that's really done, we can't sit down, the coach is unable to sit down with the team and really clearly set out the objectives. We may have already had a preliminary meeting and sort of set some soft objectives and metrics and some review points, but those are really not hard and fast in my mind until we've actually completed the survey of the environment and are able to come back and say, you know, independent of what you've told me, this is information that I've collected from a variety of sources that either substantiates our previous discussions as to what our objectives should be to cure some of the performance issues, or it doesn't substantiate some of our previous assumptions, and we need to sort of stop and take a look and agree that what the problem really is. You know, there's studies that have been done for years about the difference in the sort of the Japanese philosophy of management and the philosophy of management that we have here in the United States. And it was clearly summed up in one article that I read that said that, you know, in the Japanese environment, when there is a management meeting, something like 80 to 90% of the time in that management meeting is spent identifying what the problem is, defining the problem, and getting clear agreement as to what the issue is. And only something like 10% of the time is actually spent in working on the solution to the problem. Our system generally here in the United States is definitely the opposite. We pride ourselves on our entrepreneurial spirit, especially in small and mid-sized companies. It's show me the fire and I'll put it out. So what happens is if you look at our management meetings, we're spending 10% of the time identifying the problem and 80 to 90% of the time exploring solutions. Well, it's obvious from this example that what happens, if you haven't identified the right problem, how can you possibly have the right solution? You may have the right solution, but it may be for the wrong problem. So one of the things we want to do in this defining the engagement and surveying the environment and then setting the objectives of the group coaching engagement is to really make sure that we have truly defined what are the issues, what are the behaviors that we want to change and correct, and what are the metrics that we're going to use to measure success in this engagement. Once that's agreed upon, the real coaching really gets started here. It's a mix of individual coachings in many situations where I'm working with in a corporate environment. I will have at least one day where I'm a month where I'm in the corporate offices and meeting with each of the direct reports for any place from 45 minutes to an hour to coach them on what's going on, to coach them on their behavior and how it's impacting the group objectives for the team. During this time, one of the ground rules that we set is that besides coaching them on this, they're also free to bring up any other issues that they're having, and we may do some side coaching on other issues that they're having, maybe with their staff, maybe with just more personal issues. And I like to really maintain that, and sometimes I find CEOs sort of resistant to that and saying, well, no, we've hired you for this engagement to coach on this one issue, and I don't want you spending any time with my staff on any side issues going down these rabbit trails, so to speak, of fascinating problems, but ones which I'm not concerned about. And I really try to talk them out of that because it's many times I find it's these sort of side coaching issues that really end up back and having the best impact on what we're trying to coach on. On the behavior that we're trying to change. So there's individual coaching. In addition to the one-on-one meetings, the face-to-face meetings that I would have with the individual members of the team, I would most frequently follow it up with, again, at least one phone call during the month so that I'm having two points of contact with them personally each month, one on a face-to-face and one in a phone follow-up coaching. In addition to that, we get into the group coaching environment, which is my involvement as a coach or our involvement as a coach in their management or group meetings. And as I said, I really encourage them to let me sit in and observe their monthly operational review meeting and also sit in at least initially for a period of time on the one-on-one meetings that each CEO usually has with his direct reports on a monthly basis. Now, what is the role that I'm playing in these management meetings? Frequently, I'm called upon to facilitate these meetings. Not my first choice, unless that facilitation is being done as a model of what kind of coaching behavior do we want the facilitator to exhibit, in which case I'm more than happy to facilitate a meeting or a couple of meetings. But using the coach to facilitate all the meetings is a little bit too much of a crutch and really kind of slows down the learning process. From a selfish point of view, it might guarantee the engagement goes on longer, but that's really not my objective here. So I want to sit in on that management meeting. I want to observe what's going on so that it provides me with information that I can use in the individual coaching sessions that I will then have with the team members. Coaching of the individuals happens before the meetings. Frequently, in the one-on-ones, whether it's the phone or the face-to-face, I am spending time coaching the individual about, hey, last month in the management meeting, last month in your review meeting, I observed these behaviors. I observed these issues. I observed these things that could be changed. Why was this behavior being exhibited? So we coach about what went on in that meeting. We take it apart. We dissect it. And we look at, is there a way or is there something that needs to be changed to create a better behavior, a better environment, a more cooperative situation? Obviously, after the meeting, we're going through the same. So we're coaching, hey, this is what went on in the last meeting. Let's look at that. Let's talk about it. Why did it happen? What was the reason? And then we're coaching, okay, how are you going to carry forward what we just talked about in the next meeting? What will be the differences? What will be the change? So we've got a before and after. The other thing that I find extremely valuable once the group has sort of become used to the coach being in the management meetings is coaching during the meeting. Not only can this be a great learning opportunity because it's real time. It's not 3 weeks after, 2 days after when everything's foggy. It's real time. It just happened 30 seconds ago. Stop. We're going to coach on this. But it also creates an opportunity to sometime diffuse behavior before it really becomes explosive by converting what's going on into a coaching dialogue. So frequently during a meeting, I will stop a dialogue that's going on and ask permission. Could we hold the conversation for a minute while we talk about what's going on here? Can I provide some coaching tips or ask some coaching questions? And usually the answer is yes. Sometimes it's, well, let us just get this down on the board. Okay, and then we'll go back to it. So, but the idea is to just take a time out and talk about, okay, what just happened here? And I may have observed that someone was being excluded from the group. I may have observed that the facilitator, the leader's behavior was such that it was closing down group participation. There could be any number of things that you as a coach observed going on in terms of the interpersonal dynamics that are taking place with this group. And this is an opportunity to stop the meeting and go, what did everybody just see? Anybody want to share with me what they saw? And then be silent and wait and see what did they observe what you saw as a coach? And if they didn't, then I'm going to go through some questions, kind of try to lead them to it and see if I can usually, and it almost always happens, somebody will eventually identify, well, you know what? I saw this happen. I thought it was kind of weird, but I didn't think about it because I was thinking about the solution to the issue we were talking about. I wasn't really thinking about the behavior that was going on. So this kind of real-time coaching creates fantastic learning opportunities because you catch them right then. Now, let me just emphasize before we go too far, you also want to use this when everything is going perfectly. There's nothing better in terms of cementing learning than to catch somebody doing something right. So when I observe some really great coaching behavior going on in the meeting, I like to stop the meeting. Anybody see what was going on? And then let someone say, you know, I can't believe the change I saw in the way in which James presented this. You know, I know he was talking about the opposite point of view that I had. Feel attacked. The way in which he talked about it was such that we were talking about the issue, not directing it at me. And I was able to listen to him better and take a more objective point of view. And I can kind of see he had a point here and so forth. So really catch him doing it right. You know, we use this when we're training puppy dogs and we're training children. So, hey, adults are no different, especially in the business place. They're probably more like puppy dogs and children than we really want to acknowledge. So the group coaching goes on in the meetings, before the meetings, after the meetings, during the meetings, and pretty soon what you hope to achieve is, as you're calling out these coaching opportunities, you're really training the team in your coaching language. You're training them to observe behavior. You're training them to observe their impact that their communication has on other people. You're training them to be better listeners, to be more sensitive as to the impact they're having on the room, not only in the spoken word, but in their body language, their gestures, everything that's going on, the way they slam down their pencil on the desk, or the way they got up to step out of the room and take a break always when Joe's talking. So that kind of training is really, there is no place else that anybody gets it. And if you do it right, eventually, as you start to leave the coaching engagement, you have a sense of comfort that there's always going to be a coach in the room, even when you're not there, because you've trained this team to be aware of coaching and to use it in their language and in their management practice. You know, we talk about goals, and goals are always, you know, we talk about SMART goals. We talk about goals being specific, measurable, accountable, time-sensitive, all of those kinds of things. And, you know, they're good. We have to have them in business. But the thing that I think is just as important, maybe even more important, that we don't talk about is dreams. The closest we get to it is when we talk about corporate vision. And we talk about, well, the vision for the corporation at some point out in the future is that we're going to be the number one provider of healthcare facilities in Orange County. We're going to be the go-to CPA firm for tax issues, for small businesses, whatever it might be. We kind of start to get to the dream when we're talking about vision for the corporation. But when we talk about the dream, we're talking about something that the minute you put it in writing, you've almost diffused it. I had a great conversation with my personal coach, Cynthia Lloyd-Darst, this morning about this issue. She uses the woo-woo coaching language of talking about essence. And, of course, essence turns all my business associates, puts them to sleep, because essence sounds really just too esoteric. So we talk about dream. I think we can all relate to it a little better. It's the feeling that you get. It's when you're in the zone, when you know everything's going right, when you know you're at peak performance, when you know things are really clicking, whatever language you want to use, that's the dream. And if we can identify the dream that we're looking for, in other words, what's the environment, what's the performance level that we're looking for out of this management team, not just in terms of metrics, but in terms of ability, in terms of cooperation, in terms of communication, in terms of truly how they work as a team. You know, you think about this, and there are teams that are dealing in life and death situations all day long, whether it's a military team out there in a hostile environment, whether it's a medical team that's dealing in the ER in a life or death situation that's been brought in. You look at those teams and observe them, you can feel a charge in the air, a difference in the environment between a team that performs well together, a cohesive unit, and one that is made up of individuals that aren't used to working together, that don't work together well. And so what we want to try to do is identify what is that dream, what is that essence, what is that environment that peak performance teams, that this peak performance team is striving to achieve as a group. And we also want to look at the same thing with the individuals in the group. What is it you're looking for at work? Not in terms of title, pay, working hours, public exposure. When you come to work, what's that environment that you're looking for that lets you operate at your peak performance, that puts you in the zone, that makes you forget what time is it today, because you are so into what you're doing that the surroundings are almost invisible? That's the ultimate goal in a coaching environment, a group coaching environment. to sort of wrap all of this up, we end up with a sort of more mundane. I mean, you go out and buy a high-performance car. You don't just keep running it at 100 miles an hour for 80,000 miles and never take it in for a maintenance checkup. It's the same thing with peak performance teams. They need their maintenance checkups. They need to have, and one of the things we like to set up in our coaching engagements is, once we're comfortable that we have sort of achieved the objectives of the group and that we've achieved the individual objectives and that we are truly performing as a high-performance management team, how are we going to, what are the maintenance periods and intervals that we're going to set up with this group to make sure that we don't get off track? Because, hey, if you don't check something, we get off track. If you're driving down a straight road, there's never any other traffic and it goes forever, I can guarantee you, you know, driving through West Texas or parts of Wyoming, you're just going to start to wander around the road because it's so darn boring. So we want to set up, okay, the checkpoints might be once a quarter as a coach. We want you to come back and sit in on our management meeting and report to the group at the end of the meeting, participate during the meeting like you always do, but let us know what you observe and whether there's some things that need to be tuned up, that need to be addressed. Maybe a couple of times a year, it's good to have an individual conversation, a phone coaching, a one-on-one session with each one of the individual members of the team. And hey, if you take members out of the group or add members to the group, guess what? You've just changed the dynamics dramatically. People are not interchangeable parts. We're not all made the same. We don't all come with the same DNA. We're all different. So the minute you add somebody new to the group, you kind of have to go back and touch into this all over again and make sure that that new individual is as in tune with what the group is doing as the rest of the people were, as the group was before that. So, what have we talked about today? Well, sorry about all the long dialogue. My favorite topic, group coaching. I love to work with management teams. I love to go in and play with them and increase their performance and see that when it's really done right, this kind of group coaching doesn't add an extra burden, doesn't add extra work to the managers. It actually relieves the pressure, relieves the tension, increases the performance on the key metrics, and really makes it a better place to work and a much greater environment that you want to be involved in. Well, that's our coaching show for the day. I guess I forgot at the beginning of the show here, I was supposed to give you the call-in number. Totally forgot it. Well, you know, hey, we're learning as we go. I guess I need to go back for a maintenance session. I'll talk to the producer about that. He'll remind me next time. Our next time will be 2 weeks from now. We always are here on octalkradio.net, 4 p.m. on the first and third Thursday. And, of course, we're always here on every Monday and Tuesday with our radio show interviewing prominent CEOs here in Orange County, finding out what is their secret sauce, what are their issues, what are the opportunities that they have seen for their businesses that we might extrapolate from that and show you how you can get to the next level easier. I hope you've enjoyed our show today. I hope that the discussion here has provided you with some new ideas and information that you can use to make better, more informed decisions. If you'd like to learn more about our business, please check our website at www.criticalmassforbusiness. That's criticalmassforbusiness.com. Be sure to go to the page on the coaching perspective on that website to get more information on our coaching. And hey, keep your eye out. We're just setting up our Facebook page for the coaching perspective and the fan page. We're going to take some of these broadcasts, put them on there for you to find them easily, in addition to finding them on octalkradio.net and on our own website. But we want to extend this coaching conversation beyond the twice a month on the radio show, and let's get active on Facebook and on the fan page. So until the next show, I hope that all your decisions move your business forward in a positive direction. Thank you for joining us today.
You've been listening to Doug Gefeller and the Coaching Perspective, only on octalkradio.net. Stay tuned for the SLMA Radio Hour